The universe is not only queerer than we imagine, but it is queerer than we can imagine, said J.B.S. Haldane, remarking about how strange all this business was. You see, what's been happening here is that we've been dealing with two conflicting, almost paradoxical ways of thinking. What's going on out there? What is stuff made of? Are things made of particles, or are they made of waves? What sense can we make of all that? Well, the story isn't over yet, because a new vision is going to come into this whole picture. We might call it the first inkling that God may be playing craps with the universe. Does God shoot dice? Does probability, possibility have anything to do with this mix-up between wave and particle? Well, you have to understand. I mean, you really got to understand how really difficult it is and how repugnant it is to think of things changing discontinuously. Pop, 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 pop. That is repugnant. That upsets the apple cart. It means no control. We can't control. And we like to have control. Human beings want to know that when they do this, something else is going to happen. And they want to be able to predict what's going to happen. And physicists are no different than any other human beings, even though we do seem weird to other human beings at times. But nevertheless, we're just like you. So we have this discontinuous behavior of light, and now we have this wavy nature of particles coming in. What the heck is really going on? Let me jump ahead for a moment. In 1954, a guy by the name of Max Born got a Nobel Prize for an idea. Now, Nobel Prizes are often given for experimental discoveries in physics, but not too often for ideas. And Born decided that maybe these waves that had been seen and thought about were something indicating our minds were playing a role in the universe. Now, that's 1954. Now I go back in time to when all of this heyday of wave and particles was coming about. Remember I told you about de Broglie, the French physicist who discovered that the electron in the atom behaves like the wave, and we had Max Planck who discovered that photons, there are little particles of light and they are bumpy, lumpy. We remember those two guys. Okay, well, into this mix comes another guy, and his name is Erwin Schrödinger, or Schrödinger. It's a funny kind of name. He was a kind of a lazy graduate student. And, you know, that's kind of interesting. He was studying to be a graduate student in physics. And his main expertise, the thing he was really interested in, was waves. He was a wavy kind of guy. He liked waves. He knew every kind of wave equation you could possibly write down. And physicists were asking him, look, Schrödinger, maybe for your thesis, for your PhD, you can figure out whether these Louis de Broglie waves that he says are in these atoms, that maybe you could get me an equation to describe this wave. Maybe you can find me an equation that will work. And so Schrödinger thought about it a while, and he came up with the idea. First, he thought, when he wrote the equation down, that these were electromagnetic waves like waves of light. But it turned out they really weren't that. When he actually had to write down his equation, he had to insert a special kind of number into the equation, which is not anything we can normally observe. It's called an imaginary number. And you can get one by taking the square root of a minus one. Now, you all know how to take the square root of one. It's one. Yeah. One times one is one. Yeah, right. So the square root of one is one. Yeah, okay. But what is meant by the square root of minus one? There's no such creature. If I square the square root of minus one, I get minus one. Yeah. But what if you take the square root of minus one? What happens then? What is that? Well, We use a symbol for that. We use a symbol I. This I, which stands for imaginary, it turns out to be very important in these Schrödinger waves, because without that I, these waves not only would not make any sense, they wouldn't lead to what were later to be discovered to be the whole notion of probability, which we're going to come to in a moment. But anyway, when Schrödinger discovered this, he wrote his equation down. He actually got the Nobel Prize for this. Everybody thought, ah, the game is over. Electrons are really waves. We now know everything is waves. Wavy, wavy, wavy. Wavy, gravy, wavy, 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 wavy. There's no particles anywhere to be found. That's what everybody thought. But then we have this guy that got the Nobel Prize in 1954, Max Born. He was interested in experimental physics. He had a laboratory in Germany where he was doing experiments, and he had come to a whole different conclusion about what these waves actually were. Now, here's what he saw. He said, look, when these experiments that we do are looked at carefully, we see particles scattering off of particles. He was in a particle experimental mode. That's what they were doing in his laboratory in Germany. And he never saw any waves at all. He said, it's all particles down there. No waves, no waves. So people said, well, then what the heck is Schrödinger talking about? What are these waves? Where do they come from? How do you make any sense? And he says, well, these are really conveniences. They're ways of thinking. They are really not what's going on in the real world. Particles, particles, particles. That's real in the real world. These are waves of thinking. These are waves of possibility, if you will. They're probability waves. They're waves of possibility. And what we're looking at, when we're all said and done, are probability patterns for where these electrons, these particles, are likely to be found when we do these kinds of experiments. Huh? Wait a minute. You mean Schrödinger's describing waves of probability? Waves of possibility? What in all heaven's name is a wave of possibility? I mean, I know what an ocean wave is. I know what a sound wave is. That's real stuff waving. I mean, I know when real stuff waves what it is. I feel a little bit like the crow in Dumbo. I've seen a peanut stand. I've even heard a rubber band. But I've never seen an elephant fly. I've never, ever seen a wave of possibility. What the heck is that? How can that even be? What is going on there? Well, Max Born didn't even try to answer the question. He just simply said, if we write down these Schrödinger waves and we square them, we multiply them by themselves, they produce probabilities if we fix them up in a certain way. And everybody understood what he meant by fixing them up. It's called normalizing them. Never mind what that means. All that really matters here is that when you do something to Schrödinger's wave, square them, multiply them by themselves in some funny way, what you get are probability patterns. And the probability patterns represent what you see when you do an experiment again and again and again and again and keep repeating. And what you see are a statistical distribution. Now you may think, oh my God, what the heck's all that? Look, Matilda, statistical distributions are what determine how much you pay for your car insurance. Because if you live in San Francisco, where I happen to live, car insurance rates are a little bit higher than if you live in Podunk. Now, if you live in Podunk, you probably pay a very cheap amount of car insurance because you ain't going to hit very much in Podunk. But in San Francisco, we like to play bumper derby wherever we drive. You know, when you're in a crowded city, cars bump into each other, insurance rates go up. Statistically, that is. My car doesn't necessarily bump into another car, but other cars do that, and so I have to pay a higher rate, statistically speaking. Matilda, you're going to live to, I think, maybe 80, 75, 80, 85 possibly. The life expectancy
keeps going up. Life expectancy is statistics. It's probability patterns. We know what probability patterns are. We live in probability patterns. We do things according to probability patterns. So when Max Born is saying the particles are following probability patterns, he's saying nothing more than what we commonly understand to be probability patterns. Well, you may think, okay, well, the problem's over. It's over. It's over. But think a moment. Physicists like to deal with stuff, that stuff that's out there, the real stuff. And probability patterns are not stuff that's out there. They're indications of how stuff that's out there might behave, not will behave, might behave. It's probability, right? So where do these waves of probability, these probability, where do they exist? Well, in your head, dummy, in your brain, where you're thinking them. I mean, it's probabilities. You flip a coin, it lands, it's either heads or tails, it's 50-50. That's in your head. I mean, you know, the coin is either heads or it's tails, right? Right? Is it right? Wait a minute. Maybe that isn't right. Are these probability patterns just in the head, in the brain, in the mind? Or do they really exist out there in the physical universe? And if they do, then is there really an out there, separated from the in here that I call my mind? This is the debate that begins to emerge in the great fertile time period in the 20s and 30s, 1920s, 1930s, with the discoveries of quantum physics and the theoretical structures of quantum physics. So,